Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a longstanding journalist of health, food, and the environment, talking about public policy, what's going on in our country, and what's going on in our world. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between the well-being of ourselves, our families, our communities, and the well-being of the earth, our water, air, and food, and the well-being of our society, which unfortunately nowadays is not that well. We also talk about the ecological well-being and balance of our habitat, our home, planet Earth. Every week on the show, I talk to different thought leaders, activists, scientists, authors, policymakers, and more about all that's going on in our interconnected world. On today's show, I'm really thrilled to have a returning guest. Regular listeners know how much I love to have ongoing conversations with people who are kind of at key nodal points in helping us understand, change, and participate in what's going on in our world rather than, you know, sort of sitting back and worrying or not doing anything. Today's guest was on last summer. She's back again. It's Carrie Evelyn Harris. She is an advocate, community organizer, and public spokesperson on the ills of our society and how we can remedy them, how we can take action. And that will be our theme this week, you know, especially important in the aftermath of some rather revelations. And, you know, it's really increasingly obvious to everyone the terrible dysfunction going on in our society. It's really important that we notice that we get involved to do something about it, and also that we understand the source of the dysfunction and how to address it, so we are not either failing to act or acting on inadequate strategies that really are, you know, do not go to the core of the problem and really bring about the change that we're all seeking, who listen to this show, and that we all need and want for ourselves and our families. So Carrie is like an amazing person to speak to that, and I'm so glad to have you back on the show. Welcome back, Carrie Evelyn Harris.
Thanks for having me, Allison. I was really excited when you reached out, and I'm even more excited to speak about the topics that we will be speaking about today.
From your background as a veteran, a community organizer, you were also a Justice Democrat candidate for public office in the state of Delaware in this last election cycle. You know, what is going wrong? What is going off the rails here so severely in our society? Why are we so divided? Do we need to really be that divided? Or are there ways that people of all kinds can come together and, you know, kind of act in coalition and in understanding and bridge these gaps with one another?
Yes, so we are so divided, right? And it's almost palpable at this point. And so the thing is, we're being misguided oftentimes about what is dividing us. And I think that we fall victim to what keeps the power structure in power. And I say that to say that we have people running our country currently who thrive off of our pain. And the more that they can get us to point fingers at each other, the longer they stay in power, the more that they can grow their own empire, so to speak, right? And so we see that when it comes to criminal justice reform and immigration reform, education reform, increasing minimum wage, anything that would really help all of us are the very things that those who are in office currently are able to use and leverage to make us not come to the table and work together. There is hope, right? So within all of this chaos, for me, there is some, I see light. I said during the saying that change is on the horizon. We've come to this boiling point where there is nothing left to do but either blow the lid off or turn the fire down, right? And so, and so the fire is raising, and so we're going to end up blowing the lid off, and it's going to hurt a little bit, quite a lot for some of us. But at the end, it will make it very clear that change has got to happen. And so more and more we're starting to see that. We're seeing in the numbers of people when surveys are run and the large percentage of people want to have universal health care. They want to have an increase in minimum wage. They want to have just immigration reform. They want to make sure that their children are properly educated. They want to be able to not just work, but to live. And this is universal. It doesn't matter a person's race, income, political affiliation. We're seeing that these are the places where we agree and we can move forward. Now is the point where we have to come together and make it very clear to our elected officials that we are not going to let you divide us. And in fact, we're going to come as a united front and make the changes that we expect you to vote on.
You know, you bring up a really important point, which is that people who are like-minded about these issues are, in fact, the American majority. This is the majority
yes.
of people who don't want to see abuse of immigrant families, who want to continue the American tradition of welcoming people to our shores who then become, you know, great contributors to our society, not send people to the gate, who have built their lives here and started families here and who are making a wonderful contribution. And so, you know, we're all the descendants of immigrants. That's the thing that is so astounding, and yet we forget it. We forget that, you know, the majority of us, if we're not Native American, you know, have emigrated. Our ancestors have immigrated here, and yet we, you know, kind of act as if we want to draw a line today and say, I'm here and you're not, or I belong and you don't. And this is coming out of economic insecurity, I think, primarily, as well as bad role models and, you know, kind of ugly, harsh bent that has come into the conversation. How would the kinds of, you know, the provision of Medicare for all, the kinds of economic shifts promoted by the progressive movement, how would that help all people?
Right. So as I was kept shouting during the campaign, and then even before that and since, when people do not have their basic needs met, they do not have the time, often the extra energy to look a little further into what's going on. And so they turn to things such as sound bites and little snippets of information they might see on Facebook and items of that nature. And so it makes it very easy to make them follow a certain path that may not, and more than likely is not, in their best interest. So when we decide to pass provisions such as Medicare for All and raising the minimum wage and making sure that higher education is affordable, we make it so that people's basic needs are met and they can pay attention and start changing the other things that are so important, such as saving the environment and having dialogue that is uncomfortable but necessary to start bridging and mending these racial divides that we have and are a part of our American history, but most of us want to heal. It's going to allow for us to look at other areas that we can actually grow in as a society. Again, if we do not meet people's basic needs, we are going to continue to stay in this same cycle, because there will be policies that will continuously be passed that are only in the best interest of those who are already doing extremely well, while the rest of us are just gasping for air and hoping to survive and hoping that tomorrow doesn't get worse, but we at least stays the same.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to ask, because one of the things that was so impressive in your campaign this past year was that being, you know, just not a figurehead politician who comes in with a lot of, you know, donor support in a, you know, in a dressy outfit or some kind and, you know, goes around,
right.
But that you really got down to the grassroots, on the ground, with the people of all kinds, without hesitation. And were you finding that you were able to bridge some of these gaps and really communicate through these divides to all kinds of people? Because my perception is that if anyone can do that, it's the people who, you know, are willing to have that conversation and go anywhere and talk to anyone to do that. Like, what did you find as, you know, through your campaign and your reaching out to do that?
So I found that I've always believed that we have more that we are connected with than we have that divides us, and our struggles are connected, as we've heard over and over again. And so, you know, I have this special privilege, and I often joke about it, of saying that I'm a whole otherness, right? I'm Black, I'm white, I present as Spanish, I am a member, you know, I'm a member of the LGBTQ community, I am a parent, I am low-income working class, mm-hmm. and so I can relate to just about anybody's experience, right? I can look at somebody who is white and is struggling and understand that sometimes when they hear white privilege, they're not feeling privileged in that moment. I can also understand that when I'm sitting with somebody who is of Hispanic descent and having that fear of what does it feel like for people to question whether you are even expected to be in this church, right? I know from my background and my experience as a person of African-American descent, what it is for my family members to have to feel like they had to prove that they also were American and put as much into America as anybody else, right? And the list goes on and on. I know what it is to struggle and not be able to find a job and have to work at a gas station frying chicken just to make ends meet and clean people's basements and know that there's supposed to be more out there for me, but for some reason it's just not coming into my this moment, and how that really weighs on you, because you're literally, there were times where I had to make decisions to not eat so that my children could have extra food, right? And so this is unfortunately not a story that is unique to myself. It's becoming more and more of the American story that used to be, but it's coming back down, and that is not what we want. And so as I traveled throughout my state and I spoke to communities, there were communities where people said, you will not be accepted because you will only be seen as the Black gay woman. And so I made sure I said, well, that's exactly where I want to go. And those very communities were able to look past all of my otherness, because the policies were things that were universal and necessary for all of us. I didn't point fingers. I didn't come with judgment. I came with the idea that we need to all thrive and we can do it together. And I truly believe that both of our parties need to let go of their egos and realize why they were elected, and it is to serve the people and make sure that all of us are benefiting. And when we do that, we will see such movement in this country on every level, and we will actually be able to see what America was supposed to always be. And we'll learn that we can never let that torch burn out again. You know, we often said so much progress happened during the Civil Rights Movement, and it did, but we got comfortable, and now we are in what my parents were heavy in civil rights activists, and they said, my mom, who was white, said, I have never been concerned with walking down the street with my family that is of color like I have now. That's a lot. When they got married, and in Virginia, where my dad's family is from, it was illegal for them to be married, right? So this is that's a big deal. These are real feelings that people have. but I know we can overcome them. It's going to take policy. It's going to take people who are willing to push the policies that are necessary for the rest of the people who are struggling in America to be able to transcend all of our inherited bigotry that we have as a society, all of our inherited prejudice and propaganda that makes it so we're afraid of each other. Legislation that allows us to feel comfortable and have our basic needs met will help us to destroy that tarnish on the American identity and move us forward where we should be.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. That's fantastic. Why don't you, if you wouldn't mind, take our listeners through how all mm-hmm. of the things that we now have on the table, Medicare for all, minimum wage, education, Green New Deal, this is not just, an isolated thing, but it's a kind of comprehensive program that creates entree into making, a very positive cultural shift if enough of us can get on board. So what are all the components of that?
Yeah, so absolutely. Your show, Connect the Dots, right? So all of it is connected. We know that if we are paying per capita more than any other developed nation in the world, if it's any more than any other developed nation, it's more than any nation in the world, right? And that's as far as premiums, deductibles, co-pays, the cost of our pharmaceuticals, the fact that even when we pay all of that out, we still cannot afford to have actually the very best quality of care, because most of us cannot even afford to go to the doctors after we've paid all of it. We also have this concern of our system is set up in such a way that we make money by fixing unhealthy people as opposed to trying to keep health at the forefront of our goals. And so if you look at other countries, the entire country who is vested in making sure people are healthy. Because when there's a universal health care system, your government no longer wants you to consume foods that hurt you because there is a cost to the state. Your life is cut down on certain things. But there is a benefit in making sure that people are happy. That sounds funny to an American, right? Because Americans by nature, we're like, we work hard, that's what we do, right? Like, that's it. So this idea of having this happiness index is kind of, it's blasted, it's almost mockery. We're like, hey, that's soft. But when you look at other countries and they mandate a minimum of 30 days of vacation, of paid vacation, because they realize the health benefits, when they realize that we need to allow parents to stay with their children because children thrive and parents thrive, then the state wants it as much as the people do because there is a cost benefit to it, right? The same thing happens with education. You invest in education. I have a friend from Denmark, and I remember when I first met her having these random conversations, education came up at one point, and she mentioned, Carrie, it blows my mind that in America, teachers are so severely underpaid. She said, in my country, if you become a teacher, it's better than being a doctor, right? It is looked upon with so much pride. Your parents are like, my child is an educator. You actually get paid what is considered the premium salaries in those countries, much like doctors and lawyers are thought to here in this country, right? Because her idea and the way her country looked at it was, there isn't a single person that passes through that has not been touched by a teacher. They are the foundation of everything else in our society, right? And so, yeah, that interconnectedness. We do not get to a point where we have the doctors who can heal us with a Medicare for all system if we do not have the education that makes them the very best in the sciences that are required to heal our bodies. And then, again, in connecting the dots, the Green New Deal. Environment is a big deal to you, Allison. And I know that. And unfortunately, a lot of people, again, because their basic needs are not met, do not realize that if we do not open our eyes to the issues happening to our environment, it will be too late. When a report comes out from a presidential administration who is unfriendly to the environment, and it says we have 12 years, that is different than a friendly administration to the environment, right? So we have to take heed and we have to act quickly. But the idea with the Green New Deal is bigger than the environment also, because it will strengthen our economy. It will rebuild a stable middle class providing jobs. It will make sure that at the end of the day, when everybody has a sound job that allows them to care for their families and push them through college or a technical school, whatever is the choice, and at the end, still be able to know that they will be able to retire without fear of what happens at the end, is something that we haven't been able to plan on in my generation's thought process at all. We have basically been raised to say, don't depend on Social Security. You don't depend on having a pension. Don't depend on anything, basically. Right?
And this is such a shameful thing in such a wealthy society. Yes. And it's true of my generation, too, you know.
Yeah,
they're you know, and some people are kind of closer to the edge, and they're more aware of it, and they're making noise. But it's the old metaphor of the canary in the coal mine, because we're all vulnerable, we're all closer than we believe ourselves to be, you know, playing the ostrich or hiding out or saying, well, I feel, you know, sorry for you over there, but I'm fine here. You know, as the edge keeps moving, it's just like the coastline. That, you know, keeps retreating due to ocean rise, you know, and it's kind of like, well, today it's good and tomorrow I don't know, and no one can know, and people think, but, you know, look at the trend, look at the pattern, look at the tendency, and then you do know, and, you know, and you already knew, you always knew, you saw this encroaching. We see it happening, you know, at our shores with the ocean. We have it happening in our economy with ourselves and each other, and it keeps encroaching. And yet, because, you know, some people in the society, and I'm speaking for the white and the privileged here, you know, came from a time of greater comfort, where we believed ourselves immune, and we've kind of become lazy, and we don't, and you know, overly comfortable and overly trusting, and didn't want to wake up to the fact that, you know, we're now living in a very changed time with these very, you know, a convergence of negative trends and tendencies on a short time frame. And I've covered, you know, because of the fact that I was the first reporter on fracking, and I've been a climate reporter and a food reporter and a healthcare reporter from a preventive standpoint, this is what I cover a lot on the show. And, you know, all these little incremental things, the toxins in pesticides in foods that we thought couldn't harm us, the lack of health care that we thought, you know, was only harming another population. If we're white, you know, maybe it wasn't harming us because we could afford it. The environmental impacts that we thought were, you know, 50 to 100 years off. All of that has gotten closer and closer and closer. And, you know, if it's not addressed now, immediately, if we don't really go into gear and make that shift, we're not going to be able, no one in the society is going to be able to withstand the encroachment. And so we all, everybody has common cause in this if we can, you know, kind of face facts and realize it. And that's why I repeatedly cover these programs, because I consider them all important. And I just want to say, too, I really want to give you a shout out for talking about health promotion, because our goal is not to have, you know, I'm strongly supporting Medicare for all, because every member of the society must have a safety net from bankruptcy. You know, you shouldn't be losing your home or, you know, going bankrupt or broke because you have an illness. You know, nobody should have that. At the same time, with the pharmaceutical companies and the big food agribusinesses that, you know, use a lot of these harsh chemicals that are, you know, undermining people's health, with those, you know, groups in charge of how we do food, how we do healthcare, how we do energy, we haven't had the opportunity to actually promote health for everybody, not for just an elite, and do the healthy thing and provide the healthy food and provide the healthy healthcare and help work with people on their health, you know, before they're in need of medicines and surgeries and all the rest of it. And, you know, we could very easily cut costs in all these areas and provide jobs if we were really doing what was best for everyone's health, and if that's, you know, and the health of the earth. And in my mind, that's what we must do and how we must frame things. And I'm mentioning this because on this network, I know a lot of my listeners and other listeners to other shows on this network, you know, this is a group that has been the champion of health promotion and prevention. And, you know, I want to reassure people that the goal of Medicare for All is not, you know, just giving pharmaceuticals to everyone and running our healthcare approach so that everyone winds up needing them because we don't regulate things properly in our society to protect people's health. You know, we've seen in this administration how they strip down the regulations. And, you know, if we have Medicare for All within that, I am confident that we can also build in the healthy nutritional program, you know, approaches, the healthy forms of health intervention that, you know, help everyone be healthier and not, you know, progress to a state of disease and need for drugs and all of that. So I'm just kind of getting on a hobby horse here because I think there's been a divide where it's kind of like, well, if I'm young, I can eat XYZ diet if I can afford to, and I can stay healthy, and sort of I'm going to be healthy forever. Well, I just have to say, when you're young or privileged and, you know, are in that situation and listening to those people, you don't know how you're going to fare over time.
Absolutely.
Through the aging process, through a societal devolution, which we're now seeing, you have no idea. So, you know, our salvation is getting on board with everyone and assuring health for everyone. And to me, that's what healthcare for all is all about. You know, and you were alluding to that because, you know, the people who are promoting Medicare for all, they're not ignorant of this. It's not like everyone is like, hey, yay, I just want everyone to be taking expensive drugs or having you know, surgeries that are become necessary when health is destroyed. You know, I mean, you don't want that. Nobody wants that for themselves or their community or their families. I mean, nobody wants that. So,
exactly.
Any comments on that?
Absolutely. A few things. I was rigorously taking notes as you were speaking, but a couple of things. One is we've become too used to it in this society. Of having short-term gain for long-term consequences. That exchange might have been able to pay off in the past because people lived for 30 years and then died, right? And they didn't see the results of their decisions, but we're seeing it. We are understanding that even if we were to die after 30 years, that we have children and grandchildren to be concerned with.
That's right.
Somebody once said, I heard somebody say that Native Americans once said that we don't own anything. It's simply a loan from our children and grandchildren, right? And so so we have to really consider that. And as you said, all of these issues, healthcare is bigger than any one area. There's the social determinants of health tell us that if we don't make sure that all of these other portions of society are cared for, it will affect our health. One example is sitting down with a person who is an expert in healthcare. They used to work for a hospital and realized it was a setup, and so they had to leave and figure out another way to help. And this particular gentleman works with an organization that is trying to produce more low-income housing. And he was explaining that if we took 2% of the healthcare budget and put it towards creating more low-income housing, we could cut the cost of healthcare by 15% to 20%. Right? And
wow, that's an astounding figure. Absolutely astounding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so when we're constantly hearing, well, how are we going to pay for it? We're going to pay for all of these things by making wiser decisions, by listening to the science and the studies that have been happening over all of these years that other countries take and use and move forward with, while we just say, oh, that was a nice study, keep moving in the same direction we've always moved. We will change by using the innovation and it, and knowledge that we have had decades. But when he explained that to me, it blew my mind, and it hit me because, as I said before, I've struggled a lot, and so I remember the stress of wondering if am I going to be able to pay rent this month, right? It really does. You can physically feel that stress of trying to juggle bills and call people to say, is it okay if I have a couple of more days, and having rules change. I remember, our electric company used to let people hold the balance, and then all of a sudden they changed it and said everything had to be paid off. And I remember the people in the community freaking out a little bit because while it was only a balance of $100, many people having to put that $100 in that short amount of time was far harder than many others would think, right? And so,
well, this is happening right now. This has been what you're describing.
Right now.
We've just had everyone in the federal government have the wake-up call that you're describing because of this arbitrary shutdown. And suddenly, instead of just, you know, the bureaucrats that everyone derides, you know, on the far right and, you know, we don't want government, those people have just been awakened. From thinking and believing, and it's a large population. I was at one time a federal employee myself many years back, but this is a large population that, like many Americans, thought they were exempt from these challenges and, you know, just had a big wake-up call. And so, you know, I would predict that a lot of people have been radicalized by having the experience that, you know, you share from your community, and, you know, and it illustrates the point. If, you know, it's kind of like we have a choice. We can either cut down our empathy further and say, oh, this is not me, or that's not me, and this doesn't touch me, or that doesn't touch me, or we can increase our empathy and say, what touches any community touches me. And if we do that, then we want to base our social decisions on the well-being of people and not on these financial markers that are just empty numbers going into the bank accounts of people at the very top of society who are not giving back and who are just accruing properties and investments and whatever else that doesn't serve anyone else. And so, you know, it's like we have a choice. We have to increase our caring. We have to widen the scope of our empathy. And then what you're pointing out, which is, you know, what kind of stress does this put on people not to have good housing, not to have health care? And I would add food to that list. Food has always been a huge thing for me because I'm the editor of a newspaper, an organic food co-op. I've championed healthy food for, you know, 25 years. And, you know, I've been part of the community that, like, learned that, you know, having healthy food was really an important foundation for health. And yet, you know, why our circle of empathy, if we feel that healthy food is good, and I'm speaking as a white privileged person, then we need to widen our circle of empathy and saying everyone should have it. I mean, one of the things, everyone should have it. It shouldn't be that some people have to worry that the government is going to slash their food stamps, is going to live off of canned goods, is going to not, you know, only have access to unhealthy foods, and then, you know, but I can eat these foods. There shouldn't be a multi-tiered system. You know, one of the things we've also found out, and I've done repeated programs on this, is that the right, you know, making a shift in food agriculture, you know, from the, just as we're talking about making an energy, from the industrial model to a healthy agricultural model actually can help us solve our climate problem. So if on the one, and this is part of the Green New Deal, on the one side, if we transition toward renewable energy away from this fossil fuel use, which is poisoning our environment and atmosphere, on the other hand, if we do the same thing with the food and agricultural system, we can not only reduce the emissions that we're accruing day by day by day by using fossil fuels, but we can also take the carbon that's been released and take it back down into the earth and actually recover from climate change and climate acceleration and reverse it. And that same process does two other important things. It provides the opportunity for a healthy food baseline for every American. Yes. And it also is a form of business development for rural populations, the very people who are kind of left off the party and feeling isolated and having their own economic struggles and making wrong decisions about who is going to help them on a political level. It has a, like, those are three important things. Climate mitigation,
yes,
recruiting these divided, isolated populations, and feeding everyone healthy food. So that's my particular hobby horse. I mean, you know, so it's like,
yes,
if we widen our empathy, if we increase our engagement, if we develop the public will, not just that we have it, but that we act on it, all of this is open to us in a time when otherwise all humans on Earth could be going down the drain, you know? So, I mean, let's talk about some upcoming action opportunities, Carrie, that, you know, you'll be participating in and you know, places where our listeners and their friends and communities can get involved.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'm a big person that says, my little tagline is, words without action are mute, right? So
right.
Please, anybody listening, get involved, get involved, get involved. It's easy to sit at your friend's house and talk about what should happen, but if you don't come up there and make it happen, it's pointless. So a couple of things coming up now. So you need to stay involved. Focus on what is happening at the state and national level that affects you, your community, and your families. Whatever it is you are passionate about, find a group that you can work with and move that forward. At a national scale, on January 18th, we will have a lobby day in Washington, D.C. The Women's March, Center for Popular Democracy, other national groups will be asking as many people as possible to come to the Capitol and speak to our legislators and say, we need Medicare for all because it will make our society stronger, it will strengthen our families, it will strengthen communities, and strengthen our economy. We have to show up. If you are unable to show up, make the phone call that day, all day, every day, multiple phone calls to say, we want this, and it is the right thing for our country. I promise you, the costs are a lot less than what we are paying now, and we will only be a better country because of it. Then, on the 19th, National Women's March, there will be many people coming to our nation's capital, men, women, children, of all to say that we need to have fundamental changes in our country that makes it so that all families thrive and that we can do it together. This is a day to show unity. This is the day that we show up and all of those numbers that 68% of the population supports this and 72% supports that, this is when we show up and show that all of our different faces with smiles and love are moving and standing behind these policies, and we can show that policymakers that we will support them even more so when they support us. So please, January 18th and January 19th, if you can, come to the nation's capital, stand with us and say, we want these changes. If you cannot, phone calls to our elected officials your friends and family, to educate them and let them know where you stand and where you would like them to stand with us as well.
That sounds fantastic. And you know, where can people go if they want to, take a stand on these actions or go to these events or, you know, what organizations can, you mentioned CPD Action, what organizations can people, sign on with so that both for what's going on this coming weekend as well as what's going on going forward. So just mentioning the website, CPD, that is Catherine Patricia David, action.org. You can just go right there and find out about what they're up to. And if anyone recalls during the Kavanaugh hearings when there were all of these protests and people really showed up to make their voices heard, there was a famous incident in which two courageous women on an elevator really confronted a legislator and kind of intervened in the process in a way that, it wasn't ultimately successful in defeating the nomination, but I think it showed the capacity of the citizen's voice and the citizen's power, and these were members of this group, CPD Action. And so what's another place where people can go to sign up to participate, follow things that are coming next? I mean, what else do you recommend?
Women's March is very big in promoting these ideas. You also have Working Families Party. They are currently in many states and very much involved in pushing these types of policies. Also, I encourage you in your individual states, I don't know how many places hear this podcast, but please know that we have to create groundswell within our own states, especially when it comes to this fight for Medicare for All. We are going to have to fight the propaganda coming from insurance companies who are worried about their profits over our lives, and the way we are going to combat that is speaking with our friends and neighbors in our states, knocking on doors, holding forums, things of that nature. Find organizations that work with you and want to promote that type of idea so that you can help save the lives of your fellow Americans in the coming years with the passage of Medicare for All.
So the Women's March is www.womensmarch.com, and you're right, Working Families Party, let's look that up, so that, you know, that's in every state, and that's under workingfamilies.org, so, you know, you can look that up and then get involved in your state. So these are all terrific places, and from, you know, a longtime organizer, you know, let's talk a little bit about organizers as political leaders, because you're a long-term organizer who, ran for office. Hopefully you'll be running again in the future in some capacity. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is another example of an organizer who is now functioning as a political leader. We're seeing there's been a sort of monotone of mild resistance that hasn't broken through, that isn't breaking through, that hasn't been very effective in opposing these destructive policies in the current administration, up till now. And yet now we have these new voices coming in of some recently elected congresswomen and women of color who are, many of whom have backgrounds as organizers, and they are able to sort of break through and unite their skills and personalities as advocates with what's really needed in political leaders at this time. I would love to hear your perspective on, the opportunity factor if we elect and support organizers and what the difference is between, an ordinary politician and a politician who's coming in as an organizer.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that question, Allison. So, during my campaign, one of the arguments against me was I didn't have experience, right? And I kept explaining that it is important to have diversity in experience. There is room for the pipeline politician, right? That's what's called a long term. That's all they've done since they've graduated with a political science degree. And, you know, those are basically the people that are running our country. There's a space for them. But there's a space for people who understand that power should be in the people and have built their lives around harnessing that power to create the change in our communities. A great example of that is Congresswoman Jayapal. She has a history of organizing. She is now pushing the Medicare for All bill, and one of her first acts to do that was to call those of us who are organizers, both on the state level and nationally, to say, let's create our plan to move forward. Right? Let's create a plan to make sure the people are fully involved in this. She spoke to us, asked us to go to our communities and find out what the people want, what they are missing, as opposed to just going to researchers, just using had always been standard way of creating policy. This is where the advantage is for voters. This is where when you vote for somebody who has made their life about moving and advancing the needs of people, you know that they are going to continue that. Because let's face it, anybody who's been in organizing knows that for a long time, you yourself are struggling. You're struggling along with those that you are helping. So you've proven that regardless of what happens, you are willing to be in this game until the end, until changes occur. And so I encourage everybody to please, when you hear that somebody doesn't have experience, but they have experience as an organizer, know that if you put your support behind them, they will give 100% because they've already been doing so. And these people who are currently in Congress, who just recently got elected or were elected a few years back, but didn't have enough of a organizer's caucus, so to speak, you're going to see changes. Mm-hmm. These are the people to speak out when everybody else says, well, hold on, this is how we've always done it. There are things that have happened in the past that were really great ways of running things, but there are a lot of things that need changes. It is not enough to say this is how it's always been, and you will see these organizers pushing that wall to say, we need to tear this wall down, not Trump's wall, but the wall really touching people, and make sure that we create those changes so that everybody has the ability to prosper and their families can thrive in these environments that were intended to become positive because of policy. And as of late, we've only been hurting under the heavy arm of policymakers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're beholden to the people, right? So when you don't have corporate money, you don't care what corporations say as much as you care about the individuals who are voting for you.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's why the taking corporate money is such a big divide. You know, it's, that's so, so important. And yet, you know, so it's really actually a shorthand for people who are wanting to vote for people in office. If the people you're wanting to vote for, you're voting for, have a particular policy, you know, political party affiliation, and, you know, like at step one, that is, you know, that's a good benchmark, but it's not the best benchmark, because if you look a little closer, we have to go further than just, does this person have the right affiliation? True, the party affiliation plays out in the, you know, laws that we can pass. It's not insignificant. The thing is, that's 101. That's the kindergarten level. We have to go beyond that. So if somebody, because otherwise we're continually stuck in this rut on every single one of the issues we've been discussing on the show. So if they have the party affiliation, but then they're taking corporate money, then guess what? They're going to be an obstacle. I mean, in the state of Massachusetts, which I know through family living there, et cetera, you know, we have two Democratic senators. Warren and Ed Markey. And I was in an event with Ed Markey and actually point blank asked him, if we're really so concerned, if the Democratic Party is so terribly concerned, as they should be and as we all are, about the presidency of Trump, wouldn't it make sense if Bernie Sanders were to declare for everyone to throw their weight behind the leading and most popular candidate with an established track record, you know, rather than going through a search to sort of see who we could find and make people duke it out and spend a lot of money, you know, on that facet of the campaign? Why wouldn't people who were really concerned about Trump and realize how bad he is, and every day we realize that more, want to support the most popular individual as measured by polls and who has the largest following
and who would be
shown to have been able to defeat him in the past, could defeat him in the future? I mean, this is kind of a no-brainer. And then it became clear through Senator Markey's response that Medicare for All was his problem because he's supported by the health insurance industry, you know?
Yes.
So this is just one among many examples. We see the same thing with gas and oil money. If you want to vote on the environment, we see it on healthy food, in food and agriculture, supported public officials. So, you know, we have to get a little more sophisticated than one from column A or one from column B and really look at who is owning and dictating the votes of these people and elect people who are, willing to take a stand, go to the people, and be independent. From all of that.
Yes.
So that's an option. It never used to be considered an option. So, you know, for people sitting back going, well, this is how politics has been done, and I don't know any other way, in addition to everything else, you, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Congresswoman, that you were just talking about, all these people are representing a new option. Like, you know, pay attention.
Yes.
It's
yes,
a good option.
Absolutely.
Tribute to those campaigns, you know. So,
exactly. And,
I mean, it's amazing. Go ahead.
What's amazing?
Well, I mean, it's amazing how much the conversation has been changed by a handful of people.
Mm-hmm. 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 Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I once was talking to somebody and I said, there is a place to forgive the way that politics used to happen. There are many people who thought that they had to drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak, in order to compete at a national level. That model has been broken with this election cycle, proving that you can make it to the national stage and move policy that you want without being, corporate puppets, so to speak. And so at this point, this is when the people who have been in office for years or decades, right, can say, hey, there is an ability to now run for office and win. So let's change the way we've been doing it all of this time. Now we can really say, if you do not change the way you fund your campaign, we know that there is no excuse. And so we will no longer sit back and put you back into office if you are not willing to change the way you finance. We don't need it would be great to have a constitutional amendment, but that takes time. What we first need is for people to have the ability to stand on the moral ground of saying, this has to happen, we know it can happen, I'm behind it, and I will change. I think that there are people who are currently in office who are afraid of what they're calling insurgent candidates, but that a lot of that fear will be washed away if they do something as simple as saying, I will not take corporate money. Because so many people in the electorate do not trust corporate money. You can save and honor our trust in you if you simply do not take corporate money. So that would be what I ask of all elected officials, past and those currently that were just elected, who did take corporate money to pledge that away and say, we are now standing with only on the shoulders of the people.
I mean, it's kind of very basic. We've given it a pass.
Yep.
Yes, we have yep. Citizens United. Yes, it's created this horrible environment. Yes, it's hard within the current context to turn that around, although obviously steps are being made and need to be made in that direction. But we have a voice ourselves as the people. You know, if we're waiting on people yeah. who are not able to enact that, we can enact it. And we need to enact it. And it's not about electing either Republicans or progressives, but it's really about making those wise choices where you can, elect someone who stands independently, and we can see the tremendous value that comes in when that happens. I mean, you know, already there's a whole change in the conversation that needs to be promoted and continued. And, you know, participating in the events we've been talking about, is an important part of that. So, we have just a couple more minutes here. Will you be in Washington the weekend of the 18th and 19th of January yourself, Carrie?
Yes, I will be.
Right. So, you know, people think about going. You can meet some of the leadership down there as well and you know, have the experience of making your voice heard directly. And if you are not able to travel for any reason, there are ample opportunities for making your voice heard, through writing and participating and lobbying and supporting these groups. I want to thank you so much for being with us again today on Connect the Dots, Carrie Evelyn Harris. I'm sure we're going to see you, continuing at the leadership level and you know, with a political future, hopefully soon as possible, moving forward and taking steps. And for now, as an organizer, an advocate, a spokesperson, doing invaluable work both at the local grassroots in your state of Delaware as well as on the national level. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. And please, for anybody out there who is interested, please get on the email list. I travel to other states wherever people feel that there needs to be an issue to be amplified. Please reach out. And that goes for all of these other organizations that I spoke of. We want to change America for the better for everyone. So you can reach myself and my team at info@carrieevelynharris.com. And please show up in D.C. Let's work together. And if you see me, please stop. I love talking to people and hearing what they're doing to make this country better.
That's great. And that's Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, Evelyn, E-V-E-L-Y-N, Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S.com. And thank you, listeners, for being with us on today's Connect the Dots. Hope to see you in Washington, and we'll be back again the following week and every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time with our next shows. So once again, heads up. Stand tall, keep marching forward with all our relations. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Have a great week.
Well, well, well.